Okay, today's September 12th, 2021. This is Mobius Podcast 375, I think. I'm Todd Agassoward, my good friend John Westfall, and our mutual good friend Don Sussanelli. Hey, Don.
Hey.
So it's been a while since you've been on. Not because we didn't want you on, but we're trying to catch up with friends we haven't talked to in a long time, like 10 years. You know, like Elio and Ray and a bunch of other folks. But we're bringing back the regulars, and Don is a regular. So thanks for joining us. I know you're busy. You changed jobs recently, right?
I did. After almost a decade and a half of dealing with technology implementations for extremely large companies, I've now gone to the other end of the spectrum, and I'm working with a managed service provider here in the greater Boston area. And we specialize in startups as well as small to mid-sized business. And if you know the Boston area, especially in life sciences, startup is something that happens every, I don't know, two more just happened since we started talking. So it's a very active business. But it's a for me, it's a wonderful change and a wonderful change of perspective when you move from very large companies to working. It's a totally new different dynamic working with very small organizations, many of whom, as with my company as managed service provider, we are IT for the company. So it's fascinating. And, you know, like I said, after so many years of one end of the spectrum, going to this end gives me a whole bunch of new challenges and a whole bunch of new perspective on a lot of things.
I can imagine. You know, I've only worked for a small company once in my life for a couple of years, and it was sort of unusual for me. Anyway, I don't know how you feel about it. It was unusual for me to pretty much know everybody in a company, you know, versus a tiny, tiny fraction of everybody in an entity of some kind.
Well, when you said you went from one perspective to the other, from large to small, I thought the twist was going to be that your clients were 100% Amish. And so your technology, you know, had gone from, you know, one end to the extreme opposite end. But you're almost in the right region of the country for that. So they might start migrating up northeast a little bit, getting into your territory.
I'll be honest, we do have Shaker communities, so close, but yeah, it is. It's, I tell people this, the one of the great first observations I made was project kickoff calls going from potentially based on the technology implementation, having the customer with sometimes a dozen representatives from each of the impacted technology, never mind business stakeholders, but all the different technology because of specialization, now going to a kickoff call where if one person from the customer doesn't show up, that means the customer didn't show up at times. Yeah. So it's like I said, it's, to me, it's been a fascinating change. I've enjoyed it an awful lot. I've also met a whole bunch of people in a very short period of time, as I have in the past across a number of verticals, including some verticals you just don't hit when you're talking about thousands of employees in a company. So it's been great. And like I said, it's Boston tech scene is, and the greater Boston tech scene is just amazing to begin with. And the things that are going on, like I said, life sciences, high tech are just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and although many people think of Silicon Valley when they think of tech, I mean, I remember in the old days, you know, there was just a ton of work going on in the Northeast and particularly around Boston.
Yeah.
Networking companies and software startups. And
Yeah. For when I first moved to the Boston area in the 1990s, that the joke was Boston was Silicon Valley East for a while. Every major Silicon Valley player made a point to have a major campus here in the Boston area. That goes back to, and including companies that don't exist anymore, Sun built a massive campus right down the street from the company I worked for at the time in the early 90s, that now is probably housing about 20 or 30 different companies. That's how big it was. It was chopped up and leased to a number of smaller companies. But that was, and like I said, the life sciences work here that's going on is just amazing. You can't, Cambridge, Massachusetts, you know, right around Harvard, MIT, that area currently looks like a screenshot of SimCity with the number of cranes and towers for buildings that are being put up. You know, as quick as five-story buildings are being put up, they're being torn down to make way for higher buildings.
That's like in old days when we used to go visit Microsoft's Redmond campus. Every time we went, there was, you know, another building popping up somewhere.
Yep. So it's that way right now in the Cambridge area. It's just absolutely fascinating. So it's a lot of fun.
One of the things I'd like to do one of these days, or hopefully somebody like the Atlas Obscura guys would do, is go look at all of the big campuses that, you know, popped up 20, 30 years ago and see what they're doing now.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to know what my old, I used to work for old GT Telops, telephone operations in the 1990s. And they had, their headquarters was in Irving, Texas, which is near, you know, Dallas. And it was so big, it had two zip codes.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what it is now, you know, after Verizon bought it, and I don't know whatever happened to it. And I'm kind of curious. It was a beautiful campus, you know, with an artificial lake. Because, you know, all lakes in Dallas are artificial as far as I could tell. But, you know, they're all man-made, right?
Yeah.
But
well, that Sun campus in right on the Burlington, Bedford, Massachusetts line there, that Sun Microsystems campus was gorgeous. It was state-of-the-art at the time. That's one of the other things you see with a lot of the startups when it comes to technology. Not just the technology, their computers that they're using, but also workspaces. I mean, I'm just floored by some of these places that I've walked into because they're brand new. They've been, been built out and you know, essentially set up within the last couple of years. And the workspaces are amazing. Everybody gets in a lot of these places an adjustable desk so they can do standing work, as you know, power adjustable desks, private booths. And
people are back
in
the office in the Northeast, more or less, at least in your area?
Depending on where you are, there are restrictions in place. They may be in terms of capacity. They may be in terms of, again, back to life sciences and biotech, you know, most of those organizations are allowing people back in, but they're either rotating for capacity purposes and or they're requiring masks at all time. You know, in those buildings. But yes, quite a bit. I mean, our numbers are we're doing very well. I keep, you know, knock on wood, between vaccine rates here and proper protocols.
Yeah.
We seem to be very doing very well here in the Boston area. But as a matter of fact, the joke was the other day, things must be getting better because Boston traffic is back to what it used to be trying to get into the city. Oh, my. I looked, I said, did anything ever happen? I started to say, are we back to normal? But there's a lot of places that are now allowing people back in. So
the irony of this is everything you've just described also describes rural Mississippi, but our numbers are not great. but you know, we're doing pretty much exactly the same thing where most businesses are back to full and we're just riding it out.
We're very much, as a matter of fact, I just mentioned Cambridge, Boston, you know, around the Boston area, some of the cities have put in mask mandates for indoors, depending on what you're doing, you know, or capacity, they have their restrictions in place as well. So it's, right now the challenge for folks that are in anything in industry where you're serving a lot of customers is it's almost daily change. Oh, I'm going to this customer. Has anybody heard what's my protocol? You know, so it's
hard to keep up.
So the rule of thumb is you go every place prepared to wear a mask. And, you know, and depending on where, when you get there, if there's nobody else in the building and it's you and two other people and you're separated, okay, maybe I won't wear the mask while I'm working on something and nobody's around. But
sure.
You know, it just, you know, like I said, it's been, don't get me wrong. It's far from perfect, but our numbers are still fortunately really, really good here.
Later on in the notes, in our show notes, I have a Microsoft study I wanted to talk to you guys about. Your thoughts, because it's good. It's a lot of food for thought, you know, especially for John's kind of in the middle, but you and I are skewed. I skew older than you, Don, but you and I both kind of skew to the older side of the tech scene. We've been around a while.
Yeah.
You know, it's not our first rodeo, and I'd like to get both of your thoughts on telework going forward. But anyway, I just wanted to rehash a couple of things. John and I went over some of the rumors about the Apple announcements coming up on Tuesday. We're only 2 days away now, less than 2 days away. And I wanted to get your thoughts too. First of all, you're using Android devices these days, right? Or did you switch? I can't remember.
I move back and forth as I always have.
yeah, it's true.
I could drive folks crazy with that. But I use both. As a matter of fact, it's interesting what we were just talking about. I work with so many organizations that are deploying. It's all Apple deployments that are going on right now. And I think a part of I'll be honest with you. Here's what at least a part of it is. When you're recruiting heavily college-age students, one of the biggest perks a lot of these companies are finding, their HR departments are saying, is we need to at least give them the option to use a Mac and use an iPad. It's a recruiting perk. And again, here, look where I am and look where they're recruiting from. It's all the Boston area schools that they're going heavy after.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I'm seeing an increasing number. I had sort of seen that before I left my last company, that I was seeing an increase. But much to the surprise of a lot of the guys I work with have been around managed services for years, and they're 100% Windows guys, you know, as far as what they were used to deploying. And I told them, I said, you got to get ready. And sure enough, there were also a couple of them were a little, I'm not sure about that. But now everybody's, you know, we're seeing a lot of companies. I just was at a company that recently allowed to offer for folks that either coming in, new employees or employees that had their laptops, their Windows laptops for so long, they're given a choice. They couldn't order MacBook Pros fast enough for all the people that wanted to switch out and go to Mac. So it's interesting. I still think the big thing, and you guys know it as well as I do, it ends up coming down to apps as well.
Yep.
When you get into certain vertical markets, you know, sometimes the apps just aren't there. But even then, you're looking at folks looking at virtualization for that solution.
And with Windows 365 coming out soon, you can have a Mac and eat it too. You know, Mac eat Windows too. So what's the big deal? At any rate, so to rehash, you know, so I kind of went through some of the whatever I could find and see what is new, you know, that's known or guess. The iPhone stuff, all I found are rumors, and it's a smaller notch. Okay, whoop-de-doo. 120 megahertz ProMotion display. Okay, cool. Camera improvements, but nobody says what they are. A15 processor, 5G, and maybe an under-the-display Touch ID. That's all I could find. Oh, you know, battery and stuff like that. Sure. But I mean, things that would be noticeable to me as a, you know, end user. That's all I could find. It wasn't enough to say, yeah, I'm going to get an iPhone 13. I don't think so. You know,
we got to reach, guys, we got to reach the point sooner or later where it's going to take something astronomical, like it's invisible. For us to actually be like, wow, at this point. I mean, and it's nobody's fault. It's just, you know, when you keep on trying to put something new out, you know, annually, the bigger things are processor.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
improvements, battery life improvements, the bells and whistles, I don't know.
I'm fully expecting iPhone 15 now with neural implants, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I, you know, then again, all of us have been around long enough to remember all the times we said, oh, it can't get this next iteration right. can't have anything, and then we keep on going, damn it, we were wrong again.
Yeah. It's so much software anymore. You know, the big hardware pieces are more or less stable at this point, whereas it used to be I'd like a more stable this or a more stable Bluetooth stack or, these sorts of things that needed better hardware as well. Today, when I think about how my smart devices all interact on a daily basis, it's different software integrations. It's not so much, yes, it's great to have that better camera and it's nice to have this or that, but 99% of the better camera now is better software optimization. You know, you take that photo on an iPhone 12 Pro Max and you give it a, half a second and it snaps into something way better than what it initially rendered. That's the software pieces putting it all together. So
I agree. Yeah. I agree now more than ever because of the I don't want to say lack of change in hardware, but it's the lack of massive changes and improvements. It is about the experiences. And in the end, software is becoming more and more, whether it be the OS or the applications at that layer, and their interaction is part of the experience that matters. Once again, you're looking when you own the whole stack to a large extent, obviously you don't own third party apps, but when you own the whole stack, you can make wonderful experiences between devices, not only on the device. And I think that's where the future, at least for the time being, is until we have the next major breakthrough otherwise.
Yeah.
It's going to be, how do I make it all work so nicely together? And how do I make it transparent?
Google and Microsoft have been trying to emulate Apple's, full stack experience and not there, right? Wear OS, not maybe no. Tablet experience, maybe no. Or maybe where is it? On the other hand, a Chromebook is great,
And
Microsoft, oh my goodness. They should just give up on non-Intel kind of architectures. That's a disaster.
Yeah. Well, it's how do you move to something like ARM as an example?
Yeah.
And make it as smooth as possible when you don't control who makes the hardware that runs the ARM chips. We've known it forever that Microsoft has always had issues with what makes them powerful in some regards, which is a bunch of third-party hardware OEMs.
Yeah.
And we saw it with Pocket PC. We saw with smartphone. We saw it with Windows Mobile. We saw it with Windows Phone. We saw it with tablet PC. I'm going to pass out from trying to say that all in one breath, And I think, I also think Google for a long time, I was convinced they stole accidentally the Microsoft Windows Mobile playbook with Android at first, because they seemed to go down the same path. I think standardization on platform and really holding vendors to that, it's weeded out a lot of vendors to a certain extent, so you don't have as much selection, but at least they're getting a little bit closer on, for lack of a better term, on that that better experience across devices. But it's going to be it's always going to be hard to outdo Apple on that.
And speaking of Apple, the one feature, one rumored feature, I guess, the under the display Touch ID. Prior to them allowing you to unlock your iPhone with your watch, that would have been a selling point for me. But now it's like, I'm fine at unlocking my watch when I have a mask on, so it's not a big deal. And of course, nobody thought it'd be a big deal to have to unlock your watch with a mask on 2 years ago. So things changed. Now, okay, on the Apple Watch side, I still don't know what the heck's going to be on the Watch Series 7 hardware itself. There's been rumors of temperature, body temperature and stuff, but, I haven't seen any good rumors that make sense. Well, that seem to be definitive. On the other hand, Apple has published the Watch OS 7, feature set. So family setup. So now you can, you know, set up a watch for somebody else so that somebody else doesn't have to have an iPhone, which is kind of neat. You know, like a kid with maybe an iPad and a watch. I think that's pretty cool. John's favorite, more customizable watch faces and a single app that can provide more than one complication. That's kind of cool. And then Siri language translation.
Being able to have your own watch face. Apple still will not release those reins completely, but we're getting closer and closer to something. And I don't blame them because I've seen the abomination that some of the watch faces on Wear OS are, that they look really cool, but they're not functional in any way, shape, or form.
But, you know, that said,
I was just about to say.
my old Moto 360 running, what was it called? Android, whatever the watch OS was called. My Moto 360 had great watch faces that I wish I had on my Apple Watch.
You long for the L cars one, don't you? I am going to be interested in seeing, because I will say what I've seen in performance with Wear OS 2 with the proper hardware, and now that you've got devices coming out with Snapdragon 4100 chipsets in them for Wear OS, I will be curious to see what they do with Wear OS 3. You know, because you're right. I mean, yeah, you open up a community that could make wonderful watch faces, and they could also make absolute abominations if they choose to. But
you know, I actually spent my hard earned cash, you know, like 99 cents or $1.99 for watch faces for my Moto 360. So you know, I'm pretty up. Whereas with my Apple Watch, which you can't do that. You know, I've pretty much just settled for the photo watch face and tossed on. What do I have on here? I have weather. That's it.
It's going to be, again, I'd like to see what they, you know, where, no pun intended, where Google goes with Wear OS 3. It should be interesting. But again, I think for what they tried to do with it, again, it almost reminds me of back in the day. It's you tried to do too much with too little hardware at the time. And those earlier watches, you know, for all that flexibility, man, battery life was miserable on a Wear OS watch.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just absolutely.
Well, it was also miserable in the first Android phones. My first T-Mobile, what was it, the G1? It could barely make it to lunch.
Yep. No, it's and like I said, now you're seeing the hardware side catch up. It's history repeating itself to a certain extent for Google. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But until then, back to seamless, you know, nice experiences, reliability, consistency. That's the other thing, you know, having been around all these, the pieces for both the Android side, you know, when we talk about tablet, watch, phone, when you just look at the consistency.
The other thing about wearables is the AirPods 3, not the AirPods Pro 3, but AirPods 3. I haven't seen any, you know, reliable rumors on that. Same for the iPad Mini 7 and iPad Mini 6 and iPad 7, not the Air, not the, you know, Pro. Yeah. So, you know, nothing much there. I will say this, though, that I told John this before I bought my first AirPods. I've only bought it once. I bought the AirPods Pro, and I told John I didn't get the AirPods because, they're too expensive, A. And then I bought the much more expensive AirPods Pro. But B, what I was really waiting for, and I'm still waiting for, is I'm waiting for it to do my temperature. You know, they're in your ears, right? I mean, it's like you could get baseline body temperatures, which would be awesome in, you know, these days. And possibly something like blood pressure. I think that would be interesting. Same for the watch. If you could do blood pressure, I think that'd be really interesting for a lot of folks. But we'll find out on Tuesday what's going on and all this stuff. I think John and I are most anxious to see if an iPad Mini 6 of some kind with Apple Pencil 2 support comes out. I think that's what I'm waiting for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Very true. We'll see what happens. And I am... in a weird situation where I would like to get another Apple Watch to have for when I basically use it for sleep tracking, because it's really annoying to remember to charge an hour before bed. So I'm either going to buy an Apple Watch Series 7 or a old Series 3 for under $100 just to use at night. So we'll see which Apple Watch I end up purchasing to accompany my Series 6. So will it be a 38 millimeter 3 or a 45 millimeter 7? One of the two.
Okay, the next topic I really want to get your input on, or opinions on, I guess is what I'm looking for. So GeekWire has an article about a study that Microsoft did with their employees on how remote work, they say, puts productivity and innovation at risk. And the quote I'll read is, a new study finds that Microsoft's company-wide shift to remote work has hurt communication and collaboration among different business groups inside the companies, threatening employee productivity and long-term innovation. And, you know, I thought, well, that's bull hockey. You know, because we've been teleworking for, the people I work with, and I have been teleworking for 18 months, and I don't think it's affected either thing. But I am worried about new employees. Now, Don, you're a new employee now for a new company. And I'm just going to guess that, you know, your onboarding was probably a little different than it would have been a couple of years ago, and certainly different than it was 20 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know? Yeah, and I have seen an awful lot of this, actually in the last 2 years, working with a lot of companies that were going through, while I was working on projects, at the same time they were going through onboarding processes and the likes. And yeah, it's still now, like we were just talking about, it's still that way for a lot of people too.
And for John, you know, as a university professor, you know, he's basically onboarding every semester, you know, with a new class, where, you know, trying to create dynamics, I assume, between, you know, his students and himself, as well as the students and, you know, amongst themselves. And my theory, you know, what I wrote down in my show notes is, you know, I think the folks I work with, I think we've done okay. In fact, I think we've done better than okay in the last 18 months because we already knew each other for the most part. You know, we've seen each other every day for years. We know people's personality and, you know, what their prickly points are and what their skill sets are. And it's like, hey, I'm going to call so-and-so because this person can get this done. Or I'm going to call these three people because these are the three people who know how to handle this kind of situation. But I think that kind of knowledge gets more difficult to get to if you're onboarded remotely. You never meet your coworkers. And we do have a few people in our group that have never met their coworkers. In fact, I just met a couple of people who have been working for 18 months now. They actually work for me. I didn't know who they were because I'd never seen them before last week. And so, you know, I kind of, you know, with masks on, which makes it even more interesting, you know, like, hi, you know, I'm Todd, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I'm not sure they knew they worked for me, by the way, which is interesting also.
But this could be to your advantage if you play this right.
But you know, it's a very odd thing, right? I mean, old days, new people would come on board. You know, somebody would take them around, introduce them to everybody, and, you know, get to know their face. And, as water cooler discussions pop up, you get to know people, in face to face. And that's all gone now, at least for us, for the most part. So I'm really worried about how to create, not so much losing collaboration we already had, but creating a collaborative environment amongst people who have never met each other in person.
I'm curious, John, I'm going to tell you what I did now. I want the perspective of the person who obviously specializes to a certain extent in human behavior or abnormal behavior, maybe.
Okay.
But one of the things that was funny, and it started back with my prior company, and I took it to more of a level with my current employer, which is if I get on any kind of call that includes video capability, I make sure that my face is always on the screen. And it's not out of ego, trust me. It's out of, I want people to be able to see me interact with them. I want people to see my expressions. And unfortunately for the folks listening to this podcast, Todd and John can both attest to the fact that I'm a slightly expressive person physically. but I am a big believer in that. And even in my current company, where we're at least doing 15-minute huddles in the morning just to touch base for the day. As the new guy, when I finally started to meet people face-to-face, I feel like they actually felt a little bit more comfortable because they had seen this face. And I interacted with them, albeit over video, but sure. I gave them something. And this all comes back to, and that's why I'm really curious, because, John, that article talked a little bit about as more and more people turned off their cameras. And my feeling is part of the issue is we're allowing people to pull back and hide a little bit more. And as that can create a lot of the problems. So, you know,
I've got some interesting insights into this. You know, as Todd pointed out, I onboard students in every semester. You know, it's a different group dynamic. And last year we had a no questions asked policy. If you wanted to take your classes online, we allowed you to, which the faculty were able to do it, even though it was basically teaching two different classes for the same material. It was sort of frustrating. And I never was comfortable with forcing my students in a synchronous class meeting to have their cameras on. I figured, I don't know where you're at. You might be in a situation where it's just not feasible. Judging from the number of students that when they would unmute their mic, I heard a lot of screaming and yelling in the background because they were in environments with kids and other, you know, individuals. And just there were a lot of situations for my students where they didn't have a sterile space to turn on their video. So this year we are back face-to-face. If it's a face-to-face class, I only have one student who had a medical reason to be online this year out of about 100 students across all of my classes. And the difference is, you know, we're having a lot better conversations, obviously. We're having a lot more spontaneity in conversations. But what I've noticed is that the students that I only knew through Zoom or through email and text really never got benefit of the doubt from me on anything because I didn't, you know, I couldn't really assess anything about what they were saying or how they were saying it to me. So now I've got students who had a really tough year last year in terms of academic performance and keeping up with things. And while I thought I was being nice last year when they would have reasons for not getting things turned in and this and that and still cutting them slack, I'm realizing I'm cutting them a lot more slack now that they can explain their situation to me in person. You know, when they're able to come to me and say, hey, this is why I didn't get that in, or this is why I'm having issues and I really need help with it. It's just much easier to understand and empathize with people when you can see their face, when you can hear their voice. And a lot of the students that I'm noticing this with are the ones who last year were the serial, I'm not going to unmute and ever speak. I'm going to put everything in the chat that I'm requested to put in, and I'm not going to show my face. It hurt them in their social interactions.
Yeah. And I think that's part of what my concern always is. As I said, it's the ability to turn more inward, even though you are in some way interacting. And I get worried from a collaborative sense, as well as from a personal health perspective sense, that it was too easy sometimes to become a total introvert, even if you weren't by nature.
Oh yeah.
And I think part of it now is people are, you know, I've talked to people who are now going back into the world, for lack of a better term, who realized how much they had shut themselves off, even though they were working a full-time job. You know, they realized that the lack of interaction was amazing. They were the ones, like you said, that almost never spoke. Everything was an email or a chat message. There was never a video turned on. There was rarely audio. And now all of a sudden it's almost like, I know one person I was talking to who said their comment was, I feel like I'm having to learn how to speak with people again. You know, because they've done it for so long. And you're right. I guess to a certain extent, when you're on the other end and that person's doing, how do you know what that person's really feeling? And you lose when you're face to face. It's sometimes it's the overt as well as the subtle that you lose by not being in the same space with them when you're interacting with them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been an interesting, the video question is really an interesting one, because, you know, in the beginning, we're kind of turned on our videos, maybe not all the time, but frequently. And then as time went on, I think a lot of us got video fatigue, and it's like, do I really want to comb my hair? Did I shave this morning? I'll just leave it off, you know?
Well, see, that made me.
It made you comb your hair.
My video all the time. I was always jokingly referred to to folks, you know, folks would tell me, oh, you're the best dressed person on the phone call. And I'm like, yeah, well, because I kind of know I'm going to turn my camera on. So I might as well be ready.
I have to say that, you know, early on, so I go into the office about twice a week, generally speaking. Early on, actually, weirdly enough, during the initial height of the initial phase of the pandemic, I was going in every day, 7 days a week, which is crazy. But, you know, as I became able to telework more, as we shifted what I needed to get done, that less and less in person, I still put on a work shirt every day. Notice I didn't say work pants, but I did put on a work shirt every day. Like you, I don't know when I'm going to be on camera, but the odds are I will be at one point. I will tell you that our internal auditors, and by internal auditors, they're actually contracted auditors, but, you know, for internal audits, they require video to be on during all meetings, which I found interesting. And I'm okay with that. It's fine, you know.
Yeah.
We have some groups who, you know, not my group that I work with, but some groups that do require video to be turned on. And, you know, okay, that's fine too. So it's been interesting, the dynamics, the different entities have, you know, internally. Like, yes, you got to turn on your camera. No, we don't care.
Yeah.
And I fall into I don't care camp at the moment.
Yeah. No, I did. I worked with, at my former company, I worked with a couple of projects where the customers, their policy was for all calls, all people were to have their camera turned on. Mm. And I think one of the things, back to what we were talking about with, you know, with all of this, is when you tell your employees, yeah, you have to have your camera turned on, and you don't give them a reason why, what's the first thing that our mind wanders to? Big Brother is watching me. You want to have my camera on so you can see everything about me and find out and make sure that I'm accountable. And good companies, I would hope would at least feel enough to say, the reason why we want to have the camera on is so that we still maintain some level of interaction, you know, rather than just sound, that we're still truly communicating to one another.
And I should note with some irony that I turned off my video this morning for this podcast because I'm having some bandwidth issues. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. but normally, even though this is an audio only podcast, John and I, when just the two of us, we have our videos on, it really helps to see the other person's face for, you know, handing off the conversation, you know, like, okay, I can see you stop talking, I'm going to say something now, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, the visual cues, the body language, the facial cues, the mouth, you know, oh, mouth stopped, now I'm going to say something, you know, that kind of thing. I really don't know what to do about that yet. I'm not going to require people to, you know, turn on their video with me for work meetings unless there's a very special reason, and I can't think of it at the moment. But I'm fine with groups that require it. I'm okay. That's why I wear a work shirt.
as a side note to the whole thing with video on and everything, I don't know how many virtual happy hours you all might have done in the last couple of years. Since a lot of times we couldn't meet, but I will tell you, I as soon as I was working with customers that use video, and I realized, I started getting together little reunions to check in with folks that I used to work at past companies and things like that, and I encouraged the video, and to a person, I think every one of them was like, oh, it made such a difference being able to sit there for, you know, an hour or so and just talk and see everybody, you know, when we were all in lockdown, it made a world of difference. And I, and you know, we saw how popular Zoom became, but really, I can't tell you how many times that extra level of interaction by having the video on and seeing as well as hearing seemed to make such a big difference for folks.
And I think being able to put on a virtual background made a difference too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, versus like, ah, crap, you can see all the stuff behind me, you know, whatever it might be. And a lot of people don't care. But I literally have a lot of crap behind me often, you know, like what do I have behind me? I got to look behind. I tried a green screen and stuff for my virtual backgrounds and then gave up on that. But I do use virtual backgrounds. Before I had to shut off my video because of my bandwidth issue, I had a tiger behind me, which I think scared John a little.
The more ironic thing is that Don and I do not have virtual backgrounds on right now. And Don has got football on behind him, and I have a very active cat who is jumping around between my... So... Our backgrounds are much more interesting than your stupid tiger, Tom.
I wouldn't call a tiger stupid if I were you, by the way.
Well, he's behind you. He's not behind me right now. I have my own little tiger that's behind me.
Back in the day when I was having regular internal meetings with team meetings, my TV would 90% of the time be off, but a couple of times I turned around and I actually would put Bloomberg on with the tickers running underneath, or CNBC during it would squawk, and I would slide over to make myself look like I was really business oriented, like I was watching the markets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, versus NFL Red Zone, right?
Yeah. The boss is coming background display.
Now the new thing. Remember the 8 days where you used to hit a hotkey and bring up a fake spreadsheet?
A fake spreadsheet.
Yep.
You know, and I got to say before we leave this topic is, you know, I think the reason why we still, you, me, you know, John, Sven Johansson, it's a bunch of our old friends, Jack Cook. The reason we stay in touch years, because we met in person, you know, just a few times, right?
Yep.
I mean, really, you can count the times you and I and John have met in person.
Yep.
Maybe on two hands. Maybe three hands.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But then we have to cut someone's hands off in order to get that third. Yeah.
Somebody we didn't like. Yeah.
It wasn't the quantity of the face-to-face meetings. It was the quality of the face-to-face meetings.
Yeah.
And usually the events that occurred around those face-to-face meetings that made a difference.
Well, you know, the other thing too is
I remember waiting in hotel lobbies for, you know, the shuttles to go to the airport, and how many hours did we scare people sitting in those lobbies?
Yeah. And you know, when we did meet, you know, like when we meet in the work day, we may talk to somebody 10 minutes or an hour during a meeting or something. But you and the rest of the group, the former, you know, MVPs, we were together all frickin' day for a week, you know, from breakfast through dinner and beyond. Yeah. And so, you know, we had a lot of time to just, you know, chit chat and talk to each other and learn about each other. Yeah. And I think that's why we still keep in touch. You know, years and years later.
Yep. I find the same thing. Like I said, I've had reunions where I've made past companies where I've worked at, where there are those relationships that go beyond just the workplace, and you become friends. It's amazing when you do have that level, when you make that connection, no matter what, whether it be in the workplace or, you know, at a conference, or, you know, like we said, based on a common passion when it was the MVPs.
Yeah.
And that connection moves beyond just that specific thing. Yeah, you do find ways to stay in touch. And you're right. We've stayed, just like I said, those folks I work with in the past that I still have interactions with. Some of them I have daily.
Wow.
You know, yeah, I do. And, so, you know, like I said, it's nice to know we've got the tools to do it easily.
Yeah.
You know,
granted,
a phone was a way to do it, but before modern phones,
right,
it wasn't exactly the easiest way. But now, even if it's just a check-in with a text message,
right,
you know, hey, how's it going? You know, what's going on? Things like that. the ability for us to maintain contact, never mind have meaningful relationships and conversations like we're doing right now.
Yeah,
you know, it's too easy. And, you know, I'm reminded, you know, what was, I guess it was Friday, was World Suicide Awareness
Yes,
Day.
I do remember.
You know,
I should note, by the way, that I don't know if it affects where you guys live, but John just put a giant cat behind him. Okay, you guys, folks, I'm going to do a screen cap, John. Just sit where you are, and I shall do a screen cap of John so he can see what he's trying to do to us with his giant cat. Okay, I've got his giant cat. I was going to say, I don't know if it affects you, your particular areas, but where I live, you know, we're going to be switching to enforced 10-digit dialing in October because the suicide prevention hotline number is going to be, I think, 922 or 822, one of those kind of numbers, you know, maybe 822.
Yeah.
And because we have a 808-822 or, you know, whatever the NPA is, we're going to go to 10 digits. And I think 38 states are going to be switching. So there is that, there's going to be a 3-digit national suicide prevention hotline. And that's going to,
You know, to tie into everything, some recent events have made me very aware of with that day in mind. It's too easy to reach out if you feel alone, you know, although we know how hard that can be, and it's too easy to check in on people. It's never perfect, but, you know, it's like I said, we've got all these tools to at least try.
I got Don, I got to tell you, John and I were talking about you because, you know, I sent you an email and apparently went into your junk mail or something because we wanted you on last week. And I said, hey, John, you know, Don didn't respond to my email. He's like one of the fastest email responders I know. Is he okay?
Yeah. You know? Yep. No, it's, and like I said, that's, you know, it's I think it's really important, especially with everything everybody's been through in the past couple of years. It's, we have too many ways to try to, you know, keep in touch. And there are too many ways if you feel, it's easy. We talked about, you can close in and become an introvert. You can become a hermit too easily these days.
Yeah, I wanted to do that.
By the same token, there's too many ways to not, you know, if you're feeling alone, to try to reach out. And I think we should try to remember that as much as possible.
On the other hand, by the way, Don is okay. It's just that he is automatically filtering my email apparently now. Going to junk mail.
it was really funny. It went, it went to my inbox, but for a funny, strange set of circumstances, it's an inbox I only typically check on my phone, and my phone wasn't giving me notifications for it. Then there had been an update to my phone, and it turned off the notifications.
Oh no!
Because I have multiple Gmail accounts, including a work profile account, and for some reason it got turned off. And so, as soon as you said that, I went, and I went, I'm like, oh look, there's that email along with about 10 other ones that I didn't see.
Yeah,
for
not for me,
days.
By the way, other people. I assume.
No. Yeah.
But
exactly.
I did reach out to, just so folks know how he finally got on. So I said, well, maybe his email's like screwed up, right? And so I reached out to you via LinkedIn or Facebook or something and said, I didn't see it. So, you know, anyway, here you are. Yeah, he's okay.
Yep, I'm okay. And I'm starting to worry a little bit about John because he keeps on changing his background. And the pervasive, with the exception of the cat, which is now the, which of these was not like the others. All his other ones have been around Disney. And if you bring up a Small World as the next one, I think it might be the end of this podcast.
Well, as you know, John and his wife love the Disney park, as do I. I should note.
And I have been, you know, it's been a stressful year. I need to get back to Disney, so it probably won't be for another year or so that we're planning to go. But it's always something on my mind. To de-stress. I do not think I have a lot of pictures of Small World, though, Don, so you might be lucky.
Thank goodness. Yeah. That's the one event at Disney that for whatever reason stresses me between the lines and everything.
You know, for some, you know, I was just thinking the first time I took my daughter to Disneyland, because that's closest to us. I think Disney World's closer to John. Small World was closed. I mean, you know, because they seasonally open and close rides to renovate and fix and so forth. And so Small World was closed during that part of the year. And so she never got to see it her first time around. I don't think it was a huge loss, personally. And she'd never been there. So.
Yeah, having grown up in South Florida, I actually, the first time I went to Disney World, it was literally just the Magic Kingdom was there.
Yeah,
this year is the 50th, we're coming up on the 50th year, and we went after it was about a year old, my family went the first time. The second time I went a number of years in this without going. And then the second time I went, Epcot was pretty much brand new for that.
Yeah.
But it's now you look at, I mean, it's
gigantic.
It's amazing. And when we took our kids, which has been many years, we're in the same boat, John. We've said it's been far too long. When we went, the kids were little, but you almost had to stay there for a week if you wanted to go to all the Disney parks, you know, Disney World, you know, and do things like, you know, Splash Mountain and do, you know, and spend some time. Now it's, I can't remember what they call it, but it was Downtown Disney at the time, you know, with the shopping.
Disney Springs.
Yeah, right. That's right. Yep. So, yeah. So, by the way, here's a little friendly tip from your Uncle Don. Never go to Disney by yourself during the holidays because it is the most depressing time when you are alone. I actually did, many years ago, I did an engagement and Disney Client Services was the customer, and I was there in early December by myself, and I went to, at that time it was Downtown Disney, and everything was decorated in classic Disney fashion for the holidays, and everybody that was there was either a family or a couple totally in love, and I walked around Downtown Disney for like 10-15 minutes and then called my wife and said, this is absolutely the most depressing thing to be at by
myself. And also people kept staring at you thinking, why is there a stalker here?
Why is there this guy by himself wandering around looking like he's about to cry?
Well, that would have enabled you to use one of my favorite jokes, which is someone comes up to you in a family setting and says, which kid is yours? And you go, I don't know. I haven't picked one yet.
Oh, no. That's terrible. That's terrible. That's terrible and scary.
I mean, you know, if people are going to ask, you might as well give them what they're, you know, what they're paying for.
Anyway, just to returning to the topic before we move on to John's topic, which I'm kind of curious about, is I'm really worried about about the new folks that are coming on board, not necessarily young folks, just new, you know, just new to the entity and you know, how to onboard them properly. I've been asking folks to send a written introduction accompanied by a photo. And it doesn't have to be a headshot. It can be, you know, somebody fishing, whatever. So that just so we know what the new person looks like and what the new person is like, at least by his or her own description. So that's my little way of trying to introduce people. In any case, okay. Okay. John has a rant.
Okay. Go ahead, John. Rant.
Well, no. I will let Don say whatever he's going to say.
One last thing is I know my current employer where they're making sure at least some part of the interview process, if remote, is video based. Mm, so there is interaction, and both sides are totally. Sure. You know, video enabled. So again, I think you're right. Everything you can do to make it as much like it's in person as possible is always a good
thing. I mean, that's just good policy to make sure that if they're a lizard person, at least the makeup's good. I mean, they have to be passable in order to infiltrate your workplace, or else they'll just show up on day one. People will recognize them, and they'll have to kill everyone. So, you know,
isn't the long S's the giveaway for those when they're lizard people?
They could just be snake enthusiasts.
Oh, or Slytherins.
Know, don't be discriminatory.
They could be Slytherins, but
yeah.
Okay, John, rant. Rant away, my friend.
So my rant is, it's a weird rant. So, you know, Don and I talked a little bit before we started recording about posting about workouts and exercise and health matters and things like that. But there's a couple of things that I've noticed are really strange. Well, first of all, I've started using the Withings health app, which I guess their version of it is called HealthMate. And it grabs all the other health metrics on my phone. But ironically, I noticed that when it exported a health report on me, that's a very funny way of showing that you lost weight, because the trend arrow is pointing down, but it tells me that my trend is plus 8.6 pounds. Hmm. And I know that in that period of time of a half or a quarter of a year, it's actually down 8.6 pounds. So if you're using the Withings app and it's giving you a little bit of a heart attack and you're wondering why is it that it's telling me I've gone up, no, it's actually meaning down. The arrow is going the right direction, but the trend number is weird.
The sign is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, well, it's the sign is probably technically correct based on the arrow is pointing down, but it's not how you would intuitively infer sign.
Well, you know,
but my
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, sometimes you got to wonder about how folks handle numbers, right? Especially folks whose livelihood are numbers, like, you know, biometric type form. We're working with a financial institution to do some credit card processing. And then somebody tells me, you know, they're talking about how they're handing off the data, blah, blah, blah. And, oh, by the way, this entity doesn't handle negative numbers. And I'm saying, what? We're talking money. You got to handle, you know, debits and credits. And you got to have plus and minuses. I said, nope, no negative numbers. And I said, yeah, we got to talk to them about that.
Well, I'm sure that's going to lead to some really interesting reports for you.
Yeah.
We either made more money this semester, this quarter than we ever have before, or we lost more money. We don't know which one. Our
By the way,
should be the same either way.
I got to say, I love the name of your analyzer, the Bello Belly Fat Analyzer.
Yeah, Bello. It's an interesting one. I talked about last year when I bought it, and when I bought it in December, I fully didn't know what I was going to use it for, and I still don't quite know what I'm going to use it for. I've only taken like 210 measurements with this thing because I use it every night. But it's interesting, and I honestly don't think they know what they're going to use it for. So all it really does is it's a surface analyzer. It basically analyzes above and below your belly button to get your visceral fat and a measure of your subcutaneous fat, and it then just tells it to you. And of course, over time, this is slow change. And of course, over time, you also notice slow change in both of these levels of fat by using a mirror. So, and the app has absolutely no actionable advice at all on anything. It's like very much, you know, so then, and they're totally building this out as they go along. It's really interesting to see a product that they were able to bring to market. So many things today you look at and they're crowdsourced and you don't get them until they really know what they're doing. This was no, they had the device ready to go. They just couldn't figure out what to do with it. So honestly, you know, it wasn't until about 3 months ago that they actually had a way for you to export your data. And now they've kind of figured out that they only want to let people who are really using their app export the data. So you have to have a certain number of data points in and regularly using the app to even be able to do the data exploit. So in a sense, they're kind of holding your data hostage, but it's pretty useless data. So I don't know how much you're going to really care about it.
I can see you getting really, really getting excited about the day you can export the data only to go, okay, now what?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's exactly it. And like I said, it's slow change data. It's very imprecise data because unless you hold the device exactly in the same spot every day on your body, you're going to get some variance. And sometimes that variance can be up to 10% of your body.
Wow.
It's like it's a very noisy metric. And I exported the data because now I'm at the level where I can export the data. I exported the data and put a graph in our show notes. And that graph, you can see it's very noisy. It kind of up and down,
Over
time, it's a trend line. It's very easy to see that all three numbers are going down. but you don't really know what to do with this data. So that my rant is a lot of health data, especially as you get going with it, is less useful at the macro level than it is in the micro level. You know, when mm-hmm. I first started losing weight, all the numbers were bad. Like every number in the body fat analyzing scale I have yep. was bad. In fact, I have a picture of it, and it's just like, dude, how are you still alive? That's basically what the app was trying to tell me. And yet, as you get more and more toward whatever normal is, it's sort of like, okay, what do I do with this information? And I don't know if there is any way to do anything with the information.
Yeah.
Don, so, what are your thoughts on
this? So my similar type of experiences I use for nutritional tracking, I've been using for years, MyFitnessPal, to log my meals, and because it's great. The database is spectacular. You can put in almost anything. You can scan barcodes. But what I found over time is the most useful statistic is when it tells me I've logged in 460 days in a row to put something into it. Because again, it's great for, I think I use it more for accountability again than I do for the actual analysis of the data anymore, because I'm so aware over time of what I need to do and what I need to eat and how I need to eat, you know, when and things like that, that it's just, okay, this is making sure I do that, you know?
Yeah. And I have a funny story about MyFitnessPal, because I still use MyFitnessPal as well. And I started using it back in 2011 or something like that. I'm on a 1,205-day streak right now, according to my app. But the interesting thing about that streak number is that, you know, you look at it, you go, okay, 1,205 days, a big, big deal. It literally is what stopped me one time. I was using it in 2011, 2012. I'd gotten up to a 200 and some day streak, and I had entered my data at just after midnight for the previous day. And I entered in my full day's data because I knew I was under that day, and it broke my blank, blank streak. And I was angry enough about it that I stopped using the app for a good 3 or 4 months, just out of spite. And now, if you look at MyFitnessPal, if you go to their help and it's like, you know, what do I do if my streak was accidentally broken or something? There is a place on their website where you can literally set your streak to whatever you want.
Ah.
7,000 day streak, longer than they've been around. They will let you do it purely because they probably have realized that people gave up using their app just because their streak number went away.
Hmm.
I am convinced that MyFitnessPal is more of an app for people who are obsessive compulsive than people who are interested in nutritional information. Because you do, like I said, I'm like, I got to do this. I got to keep on putting it in.
But the thing about this personalization of health data, right, is that you do become kind of obsessive compulsive about this. You know, it says, wow, you know, I haven't walked 10,000 steps today, or I was supposed to do this, and, you know, my numbers are telling me I didn't. Or, you know, there's stuff you can't do about it, like, you know, not blood oxygen. What's the thing that's always going down for me? Let me look. It's in Apple Health data. I have no hope of ever bringing it back up.
VO2 max?
Yes, cardio fitness, VO2 max, yeah. You know, it's been below average for a while now. I'm getting old, and you know what? I'm going to continue getting older, and at some point, VO2 max is going to be zero. You know, it's just the way it is.
Well, I think the only bad thing about all of this is what you just described, John, a couple of minutes ago about, well, I'll show you. I mean, what these are supposed to do can actually become the excuse to not be healthy suddenly, to say, oh, how dare this app do this? Well, I'll show you. I'm not going to exercise anymore because I didn't reach my 10,000 steps.
Yeah. You know, speaking of outrage. Go ahead.
It's like the old joke, you know, if you do an exercise routine, your Apple Watch doesn't capture it. Did you really exercise? Like, is it really worth it at that point? And there are so many people I know where they'll find themselves falling into that, where it's like, well, my watch is dead. I guess I'm not going to go for that walk.
Yeah. And one of the commandments for any successful health type program is you're going to have off days. And don't let yourself fall off the wagon completely. Get back on, start over again. These apps can sometimes do exactly the opposite to by totally making you, you know, again, how dare you, you know, you didn't do this for a day, so, or you didn't record any food for a day. Oh, you don't have a streak anymore. It's nuts. Yeah.
I wrote a whole blog post last month about how to have a rest day without breaking your Apple activity streak.
Yeah.
That reminds me, John. You don't want to lose it.
I have a complaint for you about you. You wrote a recent blog item and then you labeled yourself formerly fat, you know? And for those of us who are currently fat, you know, I kind of took offense to that. You should have said formerly horizontally challenged, or, you know, something politically correct. Okay. Like that.
It didn't have the same alliterative ring, so I didn't do it that way. I apologize.
But, you know, it's funny you mentioned about.
I told John the reason I did that is because I have people now coming up to me that have seen me working out for a year or two, and they're literally asking me, how much have you lost?
Yeah.
It's a very strange, you know, conversation starter on a walking trail to have that.
Yep.
And so I just wanted some way. And so my blog is where I tell them to go. And now I have a button on there that says formerly fat. And I figure that's easy enough for them to find, you know, go to the landing page for all of it. But yeah, it's an interesting dynamic to use. But yeah, I was purely alliterative in that case.
Okay. Anyway, I just felt a little self-conscious when you wrote that. Anyway, the other thing I wanted to note, you know, so on Friday after work, I hadn't walked much because I was teleworking on Friday. And I said, you know, I haven't walked much today. Sometimes I take a walk after work, but I had to go to Costco. So I thought, well, I'll kill two birds with one stone. I'll go to Costco and I'll get my walk some steps in, right? So I go to Costco and I'm walking around and I kind of look at my Fitbit and I go, hey, that's impossible. The number of steps hasn't really changed any, you know. And I took like, you know, 20 or 30 steps and nothing happened. And so I had to do a soft reset of my Fitbit in the store. And I'm really annoyed at this point. I says, I bet I walked a couple hundreds. I'm missing a couple hundred steps. I'm really mad.
Yeah. Well, but I actually, as somebody who, I believe thanks to my heritage is animated with hands. I've had days where I've been at a desk and I think I put in a few thousand steps because I've managed to move my hands around enough while making gestures and talking to people. So, you know, there's always ways you can make it.
I know for sure that knitting ups my step count.
Oh, really?
Because I actually looked yesterday and it's not, you know, it's about because just the repetitive motion my wrist moving one way or another. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Yep. I knew a person, and we have is one of those, you know, Fitbit has a group. You can collect a group of people and do a Fitbit daily challenge of steps. I knew a person who wore the Fitbit, one of the wristband type Fitbits on her ankle. And I would accuse her of shaking her leg under a table while working today just to up her step count, you know. I said, you're cheating. But I can, I would think knitting might, I bet there's a bunch of other activities too. But conversely, there are activities that it probably doesn't register correctly, like bicycling, right? It doesn't register as a step because you're really not stepping. You're not moving, you're swinging your arms or anything. So, and yet you're getting pretty decent exercise, but oh well.
Yeah.
Oh well. Any rate, I think that's about it. I think that's all we got. Did I miss anything? Don, did you want to add anything? I mean, you know.
No, I thought I'd let you know now at the end rather than at the beginning where you might have been a little bit nervous. This entire podcast, I've been on a machine running Windows 11 Insider.
Oh, okay.
And I'm actually using the out-of-the-box Teams chat functionality for it. And so far, so good.
Yeah, except for me because I've got bandwidth problems. But that's not your fault.
don't try and blame that one on me or Windows 11, Todd. Okay.
Yeah. How do you like Windows 11 so far?
I'm amazed you have one of the three devices that's compatible with Windows 11.
Exactly.
That's a great.
Are you actually running?
Choice of luck that you have there.
Are you actually running on a laptop or PC that is compatible?
Yes.
Or are you going to lose whatever?
Nope. It's compatible. Now, here's an interesting little factoid. I also have Windows 11 Insider running on another machine. That is a Pixelbook with Parallels for Chrome Enterprise and the Windows 11 with an Insider build. And best I can tell, it's still running it as of right now. I've never checked. It's tough. The way Parallels is set up for Chrome, it doesn't give you the as much information. I've been trying to do some research to see if it's picking up the TPM on the Pixelbook itself, because it's a true Google Pixelbook. But it's I've still got it running there, and it actually runs pretty well in that VM. It actually runs pretty well. So, but no, I didn't want to take that much of a risk today. I wasn't going to do our podcast. You know, I like walking the high wire, but you know, at least I have the tether on. Yeah, and a net underneath.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wasn't really planning to run or install a Windows Insider build of 11. But I did check to see what devices I have. I have fairly recent devices, you know, 2019 HP Envy and, you know, a couple of things like that. Not a single PC in my house can be upgraded to Windows 11.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, the TPM requirement's kind of interesting.
It's got TPM. That's the thing. It's got TPM 2.0.
Oh, it does have it. Okay, yeah. Good. You do have the TPM too. Because I'll tell you, a lot of the problems I've had with folks are... A lot of the machines that are sold at low-end prices, you know, part of what you get sacrificed. It's more of a commercial. It's not a business machine. It's more of a personal. Although that's changing. I think even the lower-end devices now, TPMs, just because of what we're dealing with this. I think TPM is going to be just mandatory. But I found some machines that aren't that old that have that either have really old. Even though they're fairly newer devices, they have old TPM, like TPM 1.2 on them, or they don't have. Some of them aren't TPM at all.
Well, I can't figure it out. I know I also have a Lenovo ThinkPad. Is it a ThinkPad? Well, some kind of Lenovo laptop for work. And it's not that old, 2 years old maybe, and it's not compatible either.
Do yourself a favor, because this is this I've seen. Make sure you've got latest not just BIOS firmware, but make sure you have the latest TPM firmware. A lot of devices, oh my gosh, I can't tell you how much I've come across this, not in relation to Windows 11, but in relation to endpoint management and turning on BitLocker as a policy through like Microsoft Endpoint Manager or Workspace ONE UEM. What happens is... And I'm not going to name any vendors specifically, but certain major, extremely major laptop vendors, and more importantly, desktop vendors that make a laptop and desktop have had issues with TPM, where their TPM 2.0, but the firmware had issues with it. And what ends up happening is it either doesn't report, TPM doesn't even appear to be there. From a reporting perspective, or it's got some glitchiness. So there's firmware updates, not just for, and the important thing is folks think it's BIOS. There's typically separate TPM firmware. Make sure you're checking with your vendor to have the latest and greatest TPM firmware installed. Yeah, trust me, I'm experiencing this pain firsthand. For some customers, like I said, not in relation to Windows 11, but one of the checks.
Just stuff, yeah.
The same thing. If the TPM firmware is not reporting properly, if the TPM is not reporting properly because the firmware needs to be updated, then same thing. So.
Anyway, Don, it's been great catching up with you for Mobile Views Podcast 375, and we'll talk to you again.